Brian Had a Dream. 10,000 movies, 40 years. This is his journey, and this is your invitation to join along. This is the quest for 10,000.
Hi, I'm Ben.
And I'm Brian.
And welcome once again to the quest for 10,000, our audio journey with Brian as he tries to watch 10,000 movies before he turns 40. And he is going to do it. This episode, we talk about his 9,994th film on his quest, the biopic Vice, directed by SNL former head writer Adam McKay, and starring Christian Bale in another one of his chameleon-like roles. We'll talk to Brian about the film and maybe again about some of the pluses and minuses of biopics in general, as we've talked about before on this quest. So our top five, as of yet, unreleased, unannounced biopic films for historical figures. Brian, before we get to all of that, tell us also, you've been watching some other films again, just kind of to make sure that you really kind of have their presence in your mind as you get closer and closer to 10,000. So tell us, were there any movies that you watched to kind of prepare yourself for seeing Vice? Did you watch any other kind of biopic films? Did you watch any other kind of political things? Just to kind of get you in the right mind to see this movie.
I don't know that I've seen any political movies lately about that, but mostly right now I'm just rewatching some old movies that I hadn't seen. I saw 20 years ago and haven't seen since. So my goal is to have every movie within this decade. And I'm close. But every movie since I really started this in earnest in 2010, and sometimes I've been moving some movies up the rankings that I thought were crap and weren't quite as crappy as I thought they were.
Well, where in your mind does Vice kind of shake out in all this sort of stuff? Is it more of the not crap or crap category?
It is
nominated for an Academy Award.
I understand that it is a legitimate hit job, if you will. I mean, I get that, and I get the complaints that it's unfair to the vice president and all that.
I want to ask you a little bit more about that and rationalizing some of the controversy that has surrounded the film, as well as another biopic that's in this year's Oscar pictures. By the time this podcast is released, we already know who's won the Oscar, but we probably should talk a little bit about some of the criticism that leveled not only at Vice, but also at Bohemian Rhapsody. But before getting into that, let me just ask you maybe the most simple question. Why did you want this movie to be one of your last 10 before 10,000? Was it because you really like Adam McKay? You really like Christian Bale? It was just there and it was time to see another film? What was it about?
I mean, it was nominated. I am a political, like, especially in, like, insider accounts of what happened, junkie. I love that kind of stuff. I mean, I like the politics of it and all that, but I really like seeing these as people that are like, have their own individual motivations and rationales and ways they're doing things and how that sort of like plays out in a national stage. I mean, I love the idea that one person's like desire to do something all of a sudden changes the shape of a whole nation. You know, I love that. I love the way our system, how it works and how it functions. I really enjoy it. So I enjoy movies like this. Like I enjoy documentaries like this. Like there's a famous one about Bill Clinton's presidential campaign called The War Room. And it was sort of what gave George Stephanopoulos a career. But it really did because, I mean, he came across and it was very charismatic and very likable and, you know, somebody picked up on that. But I cannot tell you how much I love stuff like this.
Mentioning Clinton makes me think also of a novel that came out.
Primary Colors.
Yeah. That was based on some reality, but, you know, a fictionalized version, but drawing obvious comparisons to Clinton and that sort of thing. I haven't read this, any of the criticism of Vice, but it strikes me that a lot of the criticism of Vice could be also explained to say they took a Primary Colors version of Cheney and Bush and made it seem like that was the actual historical record. So how would you answer criticism like that. That while you love this insider baseball stuff, a lot of folks would say, yeah, but they really just some stuff they just completely made up. Other things got mischaracterized. Obviously, the people arguing one side or the other have a vested interest. And a particular point of view, but just how do you deal personally with knowing, A, some of this stuff is fictionalized version of events that happened? Because all biopics conflate and kind of make composite characters and things like that, but particularly the criticism that's come to this film. How do you manage and answer that while at the same time holding space to enjoy and love this kind of film?
There's a fine line. I don't think that a guy making a movie that's, you know, at the end of the day, Adam McKay is an entertainer. He's not an academic. He's not a historian. He's not trying to put something in the historical record. So I think he's trying to make the most entertaining film he can about a subject that he, you know, cares about, okay? And in some ways, I think he would argue that his movie is specifically about the former vice president, but it's also, in a broader sense, about the mechanisms of power and how power function and how people wield power and how they, you know, maintain it and all that. So in a bigger sense, you know, he would say, I'm not just making a film about the vice president.
I think probably more concise that he would say, I'm making a film so we remember these guys were assholes too.
Well, I think he said that too. The flip side of that is, I do think that, sadly, because we live in a world that is more, and I don't know the word for it, but they're not as well-read as they are well-viewed. Mm-hmm. In the sense that, you know, almost all of our information now comes through a medium other than books. Most people, a large number of people, will brag about the limited number of books they open in a year.
Yeah, just our current president, but yeah, go on.
Well, I mean, I'm saying in general, though, I think a lot of people take it as a badge of honor that, you know, I don't read, it's a book, I'm not going to worry about it. You know, I hear that a lot, sometimes joking, oftentimes with a kernel of truth. So I do think that there is a real sense that movies like this are going to function as a biography would have functioned of a character like Cheney 15 years ago. Somebody would have written an extensive, you know, biography of it, and they still will. But the truth is that this movie will be seen by thousands more than any book like that will ever be read. So this movie does have the power to potentially, like, shape and inform the narrative of who he was.
But doesn't that put the onus to get more things right than to kind of conflate stuff and to, you know, we mentioned in our last episode about documentaries, and one of the trappings that many of them fall into is that they forget to buttress their arguments by showing other pieces. Do you think this film falls into some of that same trap, or should this film even worry about it because, you know, it's pure entertainment?
Well, this film, it's not like a cohesive, well, it is a cohesive story, but it's not like a narratively cohesive story. You know, it weaves in and out. And it sort of, it does things similar to what he did with The Big Short, where he explains complex ideas with little asides and little, like, animations and things. It sort of, and in some ways he oversimplifies, but he's trying to, like, move past that, because that's not, the point of this movie is not to explain to you what this is. The point is to get to here. But I got to do this so that you're not completely lost. And I understand that there should be, but how do you? What's the mechanism for that? Like, do you submit it to be fact checked by? How do you do that? You know, in academic circles, when someone would put out a biography that was a hit job or whatever, you would have, you know, that sort of peer review and peer pressure and back and forth, and there'd be a conversation about it. It would be sort of hashed out. There's no similar mechanism for something like this because you are straddling a line between art or entertainment and academic sort of discussion of who he was. And I don't think McKay's trying to be a historian here.
Right. I think he's given his turn on those events. And he might even argue, yeah, the stuff they're saying is BS. Well, that's BS because, you know, here's other sources that kind of point to that. And I'll lay all my cards on the table here. And that, you know, I tend to agree probably with the premise of the film. I guess I'm just curious as to
I will.
If this doesn't exacerbate some of the issues,
sure.
Of
and I completely
not reading
it,
books
I will,
anymore.
I will say that McKay is a part of a tradition that is pretty extensive. I don't see a real difference in what McKay's doing with Dick Cheney, who was vice president, you know, 12 years ago or so, than what Shakespeare did with Richard II. Or with Richard III, or with, you know, I mean, Shakespeare wasn't trying to make sure he got these right, but he was writing entertainment about recent major historical figures, and presenting it in a way that got a point of view across. I mean, he made Richard III into the most villainous person of all time, which may or may not have been completely accurate.
Huh? Well, that's an interesting perspective.
How dare you? You know. So, what is the difference?
That's a good answer, an interesting perspective. Would you answer some of the controversy too? There's been some nitpicks about Bohemian Rhapsody as well. Both these movies nominated for Oscars. Bohemian Rhapsody won the Golden Globe, which kind of shocked people because those people, the critical consensus it seemed to be this wasn't a very good movie, and there were great liberties taken with the Freddie Mercury character and that sort of thing. So would you say the same thing about people who criticize that movie, or are there differences
From what I understand about Bohemian Rhapsody is the movie was haphazard in the sense that it wanted to build to a monumental event. It wanted to touch crescendo at Queen's Live Aid concert in 1985, which, you know, without a doubt, one of the most famous 15-minute sets in rock and roll history, and when Freddie Mercury just full on just unleashed every bit of the power that the man had to transform not just an audience of 100,000 there, but millions worldwide. So, and I get why you—that's a good, you know, you want that on film. But the problem with Bohemian Rhapsody is there was story to tell after that, and I think they glossed over his. They glossed over the end of his life where he, you know, he struggled with HIV and AIDS. They mentioned it, but it wasn't a huge, it just felt like it was lightly done. Like, yeah, we'll talk because we have to. So they missed an opportunity there.
So, yeah, I think that's the word that came to mind as you were saying that is, yeah, missed opportunity. And maybe that's in some ways the greater omission, in some cases.
Well,
and maybe,
I mean,
again,
you know,
it's just, it's a case-by-case basis. I mean, I think every biopic, honestly, would be subject to the same criticism as Vice might be, as Bohemian Rhapsody might be.
And when you do a biopic of a band, like which is what Bohemian Rhapsody, you know, is it a biopic of the band, or is it a biopic of Freddie Mercury? And, you know, how you would do both movies are different.
And I think, too, you got to also take in the context also, when this movie's coming out, at a time like you're saying, where our learning is shifting, we are not a printed age as much as we are a digital age. We are visual learners now more than auditory learners. And current person in the White House tweets a lot about fake news and stuff like that. So it makes this film even maybe more vulnerable to criticism because, you know, that. Criticism isn't necessarily wrong in this sense, but your point's also fairly well taken, is that, well, it's not really meant to be news as much as it's meant to dramatize some elements of the way absolute power crushes, and we've always had political a-holes.
There are moments in Vice to where I don't think that you come away from some moments thinking that Cheney's completely an a-hole. I mean, I think there are moments where you sympathize with him, you see what he's saying, and you see his reasons for, you know, the path he set himself down. Now, there are moments where you think, gosh, what a prick.
Right.
you know, there are moments where you think, God, that guy doesn't care about anybody. It's a real interesting dynamic, and they don't really get into it enough. You know, one of his daughters is famously homosexual, you know, out and really... it was a big divisive moment, and Cheney has been real protective of her. And even in the movie alludes to it, that he's very protective of his daughter and doesn't want to, he refused to campaign in certain ways and say certain things. He said, I'm not going to do that because I'm not going to throw my daughter under the bus. But what the movie doesn't get is that his other daughter has wholeheartedly thrown that girl under the bus for her own political career.
Right.
And the movie sort of gets to it, but doesn't show the extent to which she said, "No, and so in some ways that's even more evil to me. But
the other comparison that kind of comes to mind too with this would be something like Hamilton, which is pretty much universally acclaimed and loved. And the difference, though, is that, you know, Lin-Manuel says, go read this biography. Go look back into it yourself. Kind of go back to the original sources and texts that we adapted this from. But yeah, maybe not. So real quick before we get to the top five of other biopics we'd like to see, just tell us again, this will come out after the Academy Awards have already been awarded and people recognize. Do you think this film has any chance to get any kind of major award?
I would say its best chance is probably screenplay, but I don't think it's going to pull it through. We'll see, but I don't know. I mean, Sam Rockwell got nominated just because he won last year, and we are familiar with him.
Right.
But I just don't see how it's going to pull out any wins.
And
it
one last thing.
I guess some people are saying it might be the winner of the Best Makeup and Hairstyling Award.
For Christian Bale, yeah, that would make sense.
He does look amazingly and sounds amazingly like the former vice president.
Well,
so.
I think also it's just worth noting, too, Adam McKay, we said at the top of the show, former SNL head writer, did The Other Guys with Will Ferrell. That was kind of the last comedy movie he did, which ended basically in The Big Short could have started right then, because it just it was like it was a comedy. He got mad about the Wall Street greed and the bailouts, and so then he adapted The Big Short into this, and he just has transitioned. It's just fascinating to me.
It's also fascinating to me how much of a, like, because, you know, obviously he came up with Anchorman and has done a lot of stuff with Will Ferrell, but at this point his probably go-to person seems to be Steve Carell, right?
Steve
Carell is in every one of, he's always in there. And it seems like that's the person that he's more simpatico with.
And he's learned how to work with Christian Bale, because, you know, Bale also in The Big Short, and of course the star of this. So let's segue now into top five biopics for people who haven't necessarily had one yet. Now, go ahead and say, you know, 100%. We could mention a figure here that actually has had one done, maybe as a TV movie, maybe as some movie from, say, 20, 30 years ago that we're not as aware of. But we're sort of thinking maybe those that have had some, like, little big theatrical release and push to them. Brian, who is your number five historical figure you'd like to see a biopic on?
I think a biopic would be fantastic if it was done correctly. And I think a Mark Twain biopic would be wonderful.
Ooh, that's nice. Yeah, and that has the added advantage of being period piece. All kinds of Oscar bait in that one.
He is as fascinating a character. I mean, there's even some. I watched a Ken Burns documentary on him a while back, and it's like 3 or 4 hours. But there's even a period at the end of his life after his wife. He had a strained relationship with his own daughters, or with some of them. Like one of them he loved, and the other one he did. But after his wife and daughter, he had this weird thing where he kept these 12, 13 year old girls would come over to his house, and he would call them like his little fairies or his angels, and he had this weird, I mean, to my knowledge, it didn't delve into anything sexual, but it was just a real creepy sort of, in essence, he was trying to like go back to when he remembered the time with his children when they were that age and trying to recreate that. So it's not, but it's just odd, and it's odd that like that's not getting reported. So.
Well, that's a good choice. I like that one, and definitely one that has not been done.
No, I don't think it has. I mean, I think there's been like Hal Holbrook used to do a one man show of Mark Twain, but no real biopic that I'm aware of.
All right, what about number four?
Another period piece author, and this is just a whole. Not, I mean, yes, I'd love to see a biopic of like somebody like Lord Byron.
Right,
because I think, you know, you could tie in other people. Could you think of how many people he had? And in some ways, I've read some things that suggest he was like the world's first real celebrity.
Right.
He was, you know, and he was hugely influential, and, you know, somewhat forgotten now. But I would love to see some of his, just because I think it could be scandalous, and it could just expose us to how progressive in a way the Romantic era was, and very similar to our own time, but we just sort of don't realize how similar things were 200
that,
years ago.
That would be definitely one of those that would lift a mirror. I think you're absolutely right in celebrity culture and that sort of thing. It would also have the vibe of that movie, The Favorite, as Byron's wife and wife's sister and him do what they did. So that's a real interesting pick as well. What about number three?
Number three is somebody I think a lot of people would love to see. I don't know how you go about getting the rights to do this or whatever, but I would love to see a biopic of Mother Teresa.
Right.
I think that's something that we sorely need, is something about someone that was that kind of selfless and that sort of all about, you know, serving others. Even though I know there are some that would cast aspersions on her motives and her work. But,
well, I think the real drama in a film like that would come from the diaries of hers and some things that were released, maybe within the last 5 years or so.
Yeah, her real struggles with her faith.
Show her doubts. I mean, I could see a real framing device in a movie like that being kind of the discovery of that and someone reading it, and then you have kind of the flashback then, to that kind of thing. And that really provides the real drama for the whole deal.
When we see Mother Teresa, when we hear Mother Teresa, we see this 70 to 80-year-old woman who's caring for indigent babies. She wasn't always 70 years old.
Right.
And what kind of childhood got her to the point where that's how she wanted to spend the last years of her life,
I think that would be fascinating. I agree wholeheartedly with that one. And it's just to see what you have even a little bit higher at number two.
This one is a dual kind of thing, and it's very specific. It's not just a biopic of one person or the other, but I would love to see a big screen movie version of the love affair between Katharine Hepburn and Spencer Tracy.
Now, you have alluded to this couple in the past,
and
you've probably got more appreciation for as you've watched all these movies on your quest to 10,000.
I mean, now you want to talk about somebody that was definitely 30 to 40 years ahead of her time, and that's Katharine Hepburn. I mean, she was, she came from a super progressive family from the middle of the, from the early half of the 21st century, I mean, 20th century. And Spencer Tracy is, I think, sort of slowly fading away into the memory hole a little bit, but it's just an epic Hollywood romance. I think it could be really well done.
Yeah, okay. Well, what about then number one?
Number one is a subject or an individual that has teased numerous directors and filmmakers have wanted to capture this man's life, and one of the most consequential people of in world history, and that is Napoleon Bonaparte. Stanley Kubrick tried for like 20 years to get him out. Of course, Stanley Kubrick took 20 years to make every movie, but I just think it would be just so it's so rich. And part of it is, and there is one, I'll give credit where credit's due, there is one from like the 20s or 30s, it's silent, it's long, and it would have to be long, because, I mean, the man lived an incredible life, but it's like a forgotten history in general. I mean, we really have, we really are historically ignorant, I think, from top down, but I think it would just be beneficial to see how I think it'll be fascinating.
What besides the length do you think is the challenge there, why that hasn't been done?
Well, what do you condense it down to? Even with the length, like what part of the story do you tell? Do you tell how he went from pretty much nothing to taking over the French army by the time he was like 25? Do you tell of the epic love story with his, he had like two or three epic love stories with Josephine, whatever. Do you tell of his exile? Do you tell of his, going into the Russian?
You'd have to see it as a Netflix series, maybe similar to The Crown.
Yeah, it's just very hard. It's very hard to figure out where the story is. Because as soon as you start telling one story, you start thinking, what about this? And then you've lost your focus.
Well, it's also worth thinking about, part of the difficulty is we get more and more away from, say, a Stanley Kubrick era, is that I don't know that we make movies of that kind of epic nature.
We don't
anymore.
And not only that, I think part of the reason even Stanley had trouble with it is who's gonna pay you to make this? Because, the studios are gonna be thinking who's gonna pay to see it. So you got to first convince somebody that it's commercially viable. Because if they don't believe it is, because a movie like this, it's going to take a good bit of money to do right.
Well, from a film that wouldn't be commercially viable to one that is one of the biggest hits of 2018, and where most movies are going now, when superheroes, we're going to stop this episode there and pick up next time talking about Aquaman, Brian's 9,995th film. Until then, thank you once again for listening to this episode, downloading it, sharing it. Check out Brian on Twitter at 10kmovies, T-E-N-K-movies, on his blog, 10kmovies.com. Until next time, we hope your week is a 10.
10 plus.
Borderline
11.